You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to One Two Me You, brought to you by Trust Records. In this episode, we have Walter Schreifels and Jason Peterson chatting it up from a secret room above the Metro in Chicago, Illinois. Allegedly, it's a spot where the notorious gangster Al Capone hung out. Walter founded Gorilla Biscuits, Quicksand, and Rival Schools, among other influential bands. He plays in Youth of the Day, was in Warzone, grew up in Queens, New York, writes and produces great music, and is into running. Jason is a talented black and white photographer. He grew up in Arizona and was in a hardcore band called Youth Under Control, which later became Winds of Change. Jason and Walter met in the late 80s through their love of music. Jason now resides in Chicago and runs an ad agency called The Times. The music you hear in this episode is the song Brushed from the Quicksand album Distant Populations. This episode was also filmed and you can watch it on the Trust Records YouTube channel.
I want to go back a little bit on the thing, because I want to go back to the 16-year-old. Like, I need to know this. Is like, how the fuck is this nice kid from Queens in Warzone? I want to know what was a Warzone practice like?
Yeah, that's what I felt. Warzone had, you know, we're going through different lineups, and Todd from Warzone joined Murphy's Law, so then Rabies was just a little bit kind of stuck for players. And I think... Shit, I don't know who asked me. Maybe it asked Arthur Smilios, okay. And I'd have to check this with him. And he couldn't do it or something, or he did do it for a while. I actually don't remember how I got asked to be in Warzone, but I was like, holy shit, this is big time.
Yeah.
I better not fuck this up.
Did you think it was big time, or were you scared?
Like, both.
Like, tell me, what was the first Warzone practice like? What was it like?
It was on Avenue B. I mean, Avenue B... at that time, like,
was it
was
rough.
Not where I was going by myself.
No.
Like, it was scary.
Yeah. That's like, what, 85, 6?
It would have been 87.
87.
86, yeah. 87.
Avenue B in 1987 is not...
Yeah. I mean, okay. It could have been worse, but it's not where I was going by myself,
no.
You know? And so, but going there with Rabies, I felt like, well, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like, no one's gonna fuck with me.
Yeah.
And so we went to this rehearsal studio, which is kind of famous, called Tu Casa. And it was me, I guess Arthur, and I asked Luke Abbey to play drums.
Right.
And Batmite, who is one of the original guitar players, and his girlfriend, who was, what was her name? She was gorgeous. She was dancing with the Beastie Boys at this time. She was one of the dancers in the cage
dancers.
On License to Ill. I guess I knew the songs to some degree, and it just sounded fucking awesome. I mean, it was like me and Luke from Gorilla Biscuits, and Arthur was playing guitar, I think.
Yeah.
And it was cool. And Ray was just like super cool, I definitely saw him as, like, there was that time of the guys that were in the scene in the early 80s that just like saw some shit, like, you know what I mean, it was just a different kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it felt cool to like kind of have Rabies as a sort of, you know, guide through some of that.
Yeah. How did that end? Like, how did it stop?
Well, I had another like awesome, more dream come true is that Youth Today, like, Craig left the band.
Right.
And so I forgot, I was playing a show maybe with Warzone, and after the show, Richie and Purcell came up to me and said, hey, would you be interested in playing Youth Today? And at that time, Youth Today, it's like hard to really explain like how awesome they were. And they were like the, you know, the Rolling Stones to me. Like, it was, I couldn't have been more psyched. And Rabe was luckily, you know, I didn't get beat up or anything for it.
No.
But I was nervous, like, shit, how am I gonna tell Ray that I'm...
And did you tell Ray?
I did. I did. Yeah. I mean, you know, you say we're going on tour. So it's like, what am I going to, how can I say no, like, to going on a United States tour with Youth of Today?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just doing it. Whatever happens, I'm doing it. Ray was cool to me. He gave Purcell some shit.
Yeah.
But, and so, and that tour is so amazing. And so I think it's probably when I met you in A7. So
yeah,
I got the people that I met on that tour, like so many of them, you know, I'm friends with many of them, in contact with many of them, but so many of them went on to do like interesting shit because they were like into interesting shit at that time as kids. And that didn't end there, you know, for them. And so that tour was like,
it was kind of that DIY aesthetic put onto these young kids that they've sort of applied to their lives, right?
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah, just like, you know, taking pictures, forming bands, you know, printing t-shirts, making record labels. Like when we were playing that on that tour, the shows weren't big, but we would, every city we would hit, we would see like, you know, a little vanguard of kids that were already into it.
Yeah.
And we'd play the show and the rest of the scene would just be like kind of converted. Cause the band was that
good.
I mean, I don't want to seem like we're just like, we're so awesome. You know, I don't want to like over glorify.
No, I was there. I lived it and saw it.
It was just real. I mean, that's how it affected me.
Yeah. Even the change from when Youth of Today first came, when Kevin Seconds was playing drums, when the 7-inch came out, it's all, you saw the potential there. But when you came back with that lineup, it was a whole nother level of experience, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was just like this, you know, there was like a message to it. It was something that you could join up to, you know, that you could like be a part of some sort of, you know, positive movement for youth, you know, and but it didn't seem corny. It was because it was like,
no, because it was earnest. And it was
real. And everyone in it was just like funny and talented and, you know, fucked up in different ways. It's what hardcore collects people like that don't fit.
Yeah.
That was
how does
a cool
it feel
experience.
Like on those things of like, and I don't really think they're reunions, you know, I was talking to Sam earlier about it. It's like, no, it's Youth of Today. Like coming back and playing those songs and doing it and still having that energy and that sort of feeling. Like, what is that like?
Yeah. For me, like my role in it, I'm just like embodying a spirit that I still relate to. You know, like for me, I think I have the funnest job in the band because like, I have this bass that is so light and awesome to play, and it's not demanding, like the music, it's not musically demanding.
Yeah.
So in Youth Today, I can just go off as much as my body will allow me to.
Yeah.
And to just, every single movement is in the mode, which I felt at the time, of just transforming the audience, the people in the audience, not only over, not so much over to our side, but to, towards more positive things, you know, to like lift people.
Yeah.
And that energy is just an awesome energy to be riding. And I think like Ray still has that spark and is still, I mean, charisma would be too small of a way to say it, but he's just able to, he's such a messenger to contextualize like certain bits of wisdom and match it to this music that's so energetic. So yeah, I mean, dude, we're old. We're not, obviously I'm not crazy about that, but it's like the fact that we are able to still kind of hitch on to that spirit. And I think that still exists.
It's crazy because you feel it and see it too. Like you, we might be old, but you don't look old up there doing it. Like it really feels like transformative time travel in a way.
You
know what I mean? It's insane.
I really love doing it. Yeah. And it's like, it's not about trying to relive some sort of glory, but I feel that it's like a connection down to, that it still transcends, it transcends all these ages. And it's just like, and I love that about it. I'm super psyched that.
Yeah, and to me, it's like just as like someone who grew up in that scene or part of it, like it really is that. Like it feels like it's the root of you and it's part of like the shared sort of DNA with it. And I think people that weren't part of the scene may enjoy and go, oh, this is great. But I don't know if they really feel that sort of like this, that sort of like spirit of that time.
I think sometimes like I was thinking the Bad Brains, like when they were the Soul Brains, you know, like people get bummed out on the Bad Brains.
Yeah.
You know, I just remember seeing the Soul Brains.
Yeah.
And at Irving Plaza.
Yeah.
Or even at a fun festival and people like, oh, you know, HR is not, you know, doing backflips or whatever like that.
Yeah.
I was just thinking if there was a band of like, you know, these like old, like Rasta dudes from DC playing this kind of music that we never heard of called the Bad Brains, everyone would be bugging about
away.
It. We'd be blown away, even that they're old, you know what I mean? So there's something about that energy that is just a bug out, you know, like people don't even know what Youth Today is. Like, who is this? What is this Ray talking? This man is like telling, like preaching in a way that is like, well, preaching, sure. It's just like, he's just sort of elevating people. I don't know. Yeah. I get into it. Yeah, I play the role 100%.
Yeah.
And I just I'm just fully engaged. Yeah. And I love it. Afterwards, I feel like sort of.
No, I can see that. Like, you can see how much fun you're having kind of doing that and kind of, you know, as much as anyone. So it's awesome.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this a little bit, right? I want to talk about, like, because again, I'm going to say this. This is easily, without debate, no matter what genre of hardcore you're into, you're straight edge, New York, emo, whatever it is, this is in the top 10 hardcore albums ever. Mm. Hands down. It's undebatable, right? Mm. But not just the music and the originality around it, which is undeniable, especially in that scene, but like the iconography within it, right? Mm-hmm. Like the name, the GB, the gorilla, like, From an art point of view and an icon point of view, like, did you have your hands deep in that and understanding that I wanted this vision, I wanted this mark, I wanted that, you know, point of view?
Yeah, like, for
sure. You're a hardcore band with a mascot.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the cool things about hardcore and punk as I discovered it is the iconography, like the DK, the Black Flag bars, the Circle Jerk dude, or the Youth Today fist.
Yeah.
You needed that really to you know, you couldn't, every band couldn't just like make a t-shirt at the time. Yeah. Like, it wasn't that easy. You had to like
have your unique look. You had Uniform Choice as the bar of t-shirts, right?
Yes, so, like, holy shit, they're great.
Yeah.
They were next level. But for us with GB, it was like, at first it was just the GB, and we had this little guy that we my brother kind of changed a few things from this other drawing, was a Walt Disney drawing, this just to make a character.
Yeah.
And then we were very fortunate that when, I mean, Gorilla Biscuits just kind of calls for a gorilla to be drawn.
Yeah.
And so with our first 7-inch, Brian Clark drew the gorilla, and when it came back, I was like, okay, we're good. We've got our Circle Jerk man. We've got our, it's because like, kind of like we're saying about Disimpopulations, the artwork for there, it's like, here you have this character that can live out on the, can live on the Lower East Side safely and can just, you know, do the right thing down there and no one can really fuck with him. And so our music fills that idea. And, and you know, I didn't know it at the time that it would carry on so far
into the future. Right, and have that weight kind of, you know, forever.
Yeah,
you know,
that it's just like you put that gorilla head on anything and it kind of looks cool.
Yeah.
But I knew that the record cover was solid, and that, and I think in any hardcore band, you need to, if you don't have that, some bands don't have it, it's not an advantage.
Yeah.
You know, some bands will have like a good logo, and that's the best thing the band's got going for them.
Right.
You know, which you take what you can get.
Yeah.
But I think that the tradition of, you know, hardcore logos, I think very much like when you think about being in school, like at that age, you know, people would have these like, you know, folders, you know, or
drawing
whatever.
Them on your
and you'd
folders,
be drawing like fucking Led Zeppelin or a band or, you know what I mean? Like as a kid. So I think that hardcore thing really took that. Like, I don't know how many times I drew the Black Flag bars on, on my notebook or whatever. And I think that kind of like sort of cave drawing, but you know, for little kids, like is the way that, these things are just like, you know, and then with tattooing and stuff, so many people get like, you know, the Misfit skull tattooed on her or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, that is the language.
Yeah.
And it connects to like graffiti and all these kind of things that I think in the 80s, like being a teenager in the 80s, a lot of these things were, especially that I wouldn't say we take for granted now today, because they're absolutely essential to like, you know, branding, marketing, et cetera.
Yeah.
Because the people that were teenagers in the 80s are now like guiding these things.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think that that's when it was starting to like really coalesce and become a thing, to where you see like this Gorilla Biscuit record on Revelation, like all the Revelation records were just tight. Like each one just looked like a new episode in this like larger story arc.
Yeah.
And that is, you want to be a part of each episode, sort of.
Yeah. And when you were a part of so many of them, it's kind of crazy. You know, you were a thread that ran through so many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's with the, tell me about the art for the new album, new project, and all of that.
The art for the Quicksand record, there's a cool like comic book sort of illustrated novel store around the block from my place in Williamsburg called Desert Island. And I would go in there, just like look at stuff. And Tetsunori Nariara is the artist, and I found out about him there. And I think for the record, we wanted to have something that Sergio, our bass player, kind of just put forward this sort of like monster image. Yeah. And I think that Tetsunori's monsters are kind of awesome and kind of creates an atmosphere that you can, you know, take the music sort of out of the real world and put it in this sort of like fantasy kind of world that's, I mean, you know, like if you look at an Iron Maiden album or something like that, it's like the music exists in this sort of like eddy science, you know, it's not science fiction, it's more like
horror almost.
Horror, yeah. But this is more like, it's more Star Trek-y or something, I don't know.
Yeah, but it is that kind of thing. I think the Iron Maiden thing is a good reference,
yeah.
You know, or even the other things of like, especially us kind of growing up, like listening to an album and looking at the artwork,
yeah.
Like it really is that almost analog music video sort of effect, right?
We want it to be like that idea of like looking at a record and thinking about, oh, what's this dude doing? Like what's going on here? And the music is no longer tied to the real world as much. And yeah. So the songs can have like take on a different sort of vibe. And it's also fun and we wanted it to be fun.
Yeah. Did you like all the other Quicksand albums and EPs and stuff? Like how does the art play a sort of role in the experience of those records?
I guess initially just kind of playing off of, I think initially Quicksand was trying to play off some of the, you know, the Revelation kind of like iconography, like the sort of like template of what Revelation Records was, which had really kind of was so strong and kind of, but we had like wanted to like go against that. So just like sort of randomness at first.
Yeah.
Do you think
that's a thing? Cause it's gonna get into the other things. Like, do you think there's a randomness and a different, like you always throughout your career, you've always retained this relevance with the bands that you're in, but there's always a real uniqueness.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You don't just emulate the things, the scenes that you're part of. You're always bringing something new and different to mm-hmm. it, you know?
I think just coming from where we came from, like being in like a small scene that kind of got big.
Yeah.
You know, the bands that, you know, I guess Gorilla Biscuits was the main thing that I was kind of like the engine behind. Like I never felt we fit in the first place. Like we just kind of made a place for ourselves, created a lane for ourselves because, you know, our name was so strange, didn't really like work with all the other bands that were kind of had sort of.
But I guess this is the thing that's always like interested me because it's like, how did you do that? Like, how did you have that restraint? You know, like I met you, mm-hmm. you were probably like a 16-year-old kid mm-hmm. playing in Youth of Today, mm-hmm. whatever, long shorts, like mm-hmm. straight edge guy, mm-hmm. right? But then you come out with this band, Gorilla Biscuits. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's named after a street drug and this sort of thing. And the graphics and iconography were completely foreign to what was going on. But then it becomes the center of the scene.
Like, I think we did good with, I think in the end, the name was good because it was fun, you know, so it kind of gave us more space to kind of do other, like to approach it from a different direction than a lot of the stuff that we were doing. And I saw that maybe initially, it wasn't like we were calling it after a street drug to like be edgy. It just sounded funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think it was a sense of humor that we had that in this sort of New York world, and definitely the straight edge world, you know, like a counterbalance to the seriousness of say Youth Today, where the Youth Today thing is like very like, you know, says what it means.
Yeah.
Gorilla Biscuits had a little bit more nuance and I think maybe a broader appeal in that it wasn't as sort of like didactic and like, you know, finger pointing.
Do you think, was that something calculated that you wanted to do? Because it feels like
it
feels like it was, but obviously it's super authentic.
Yeah.
But like, it sounds earnest, but it's like it was a very brave step to take in everything you do. Do you know what I mean? Like, what drives that? Like, how does that work?
I think I was lucky to get successful to the degree that I, you know, that is in the world of like whatever hardcore punk, like that we had gained acceptance in that. And then just kind of felt that I would want to react against each thing that I would do. So, you know, quicksand was kind of a reaction yeah. to the sort of status quo of what was going on with like this hardcore straight edge thing, not to be like against it, yeah. but just to
bring you
to
step,
to create a new context, you know, yeah. a different look. And then that had some success to like, you know, to continue that story to where each thing that I'm doing is sort of stepping hopefully forward, but at least into a different realm than the last. And I don't really feel super tethered to one kind of style. Like I'm much more interested in like the possibility of like, I like all kinds of, you know, I don't think it's so strange, but I like all kinds of music, you know right. what I mean? It's just that I kind of learned how to do it in terms of, you know, making records, et cetera, in this sort of like punk rock context. But I'm, you know, I love every kind of thing,
yeah.
you know?
You know, I mean, I think the other thing to me is that's really interesting about your career is like you've never disappeared. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like we were talking about like, you know, some of the hardcore bands we grew up with, mm-hmm. like they were landmarking that thing and they mm-hmm. sort of got older and disappeared and then they come back, oh, they're doing a thing. Mm-hmm. Like Walt, you've never gone away. You've mm-hmm. always been there making this music mm-hmm. in its own unique way. Mm. You know, like what, like, has there ever been a period where you haven't made music?
I think there's been periods where I was quiet. There was one period after, Quicksand had broken up and they picked up my option.
Yeah.
And I was in a sort of major label sort of like demo land.
Right.
So I wasn't playing that much, but I was making demos music. And making music, but it just wasn't getting out. And ultimately that kind of manifested in, ultimately in Rival Schools.
Right.
And a lot of songs on the internet.
Yeah.
But in terms of like me playing and creating, no, that's been a constant. I mean, it's and I feel like super fortunate to like have been able to do that.
Yeah. What makes you like, because your solo album and a lot of the internet songs mm-hmm. are my favorite. Like,
oh, thanks,
I love that stuff. Like I'm a fanboy with that shit. Because mm-hmm. again, like there's a root that's rooted in hardcore that mm-hmm. I feel part of, mm-hmm. but then there's also a uniqueness and almost a vulnerability in the mm-hmm. songs that makes it so amazing to me mm-hmm. as from a creative thing. But how do you decide if you want to have a band?
A lot of the things would be, well, I think there's also like when you're with people, you create different sounds. So your idea of how something should be like can be lifted and kind of adds the energy of that, you know, the friction between different people, like, or that combination that kind of takes it to another place and where you create like, you know, like Quicksand, I'll come in with an idea for a song. Like, I'll be like, he should play that. And it's the perfect song. I bring it in. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Because like, there's what the creativity of the other people bring. So in the end, you create that space and then you have something else that has that much more of a unique sound. But sometimes I don't want to do that. Sometimes I just want to like really have it be like how I want. Well, then the challenge is then to either communicate that to other people or manifest it yourself. Like in my solo album, I play pretty much everything save for the drums and sometimes the drums. And so I feel that came together really well, but it was challenging in that, you know, if I play the bass part, like I have to play the bass part the way I want it. And like, right. what way do I want it? You know what yeah. I mean? And that's like another challenge. So it's all just like, you know, looking at, you have like some sort of like itch in your head of like something that you want to kind of create outside of yourself. And the song is the thing.
Right.
And the song is gonna be like, you know, get in your head, you know, or get into somebody that you don't know's head. And that maybe creates a situation where I go traveling. And then by traveling, I'm meeting different people, I'm doing different things. And all this kind of activity sparks. And that's, for me, that's life, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, to me, there's a similarity between that and like photography and creativity and that mm-hmm. sort of thing of like, searching and finding something and making it, you know, and putting those pieces together and knowing when it's done is when you kind of feel and experience it that way, you know?
Yeah, when it's done, you're kind of like, cool. Like, and you know, with varying degrees of like, all right, I freaking nailed it.
Yeah.
Or like, this is cool, but you know, I wish that was different. Or, you know, so that you have that relationship to it, but then ultimately you have to let it go.
Yeah.
And as soon as you let that go, then you're kind of like, whatever the satisfaction of having like, manifested that thing, still exists to a degree, but then pretty soon after I start thinking, well, what's the next thing that I want to do?
Yeah.
How can I top that? Or how can I, what's the next thing to say?
Yeah, I think it's that constant kind of pursuit of like never resting and that sort of thing. And you feel it in your career and your music of like, it's always another sort of thing, which is great. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's yourself that drives you that way, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like most people in the world, I think one of the things that, you know, maybe it's my point of view, but people are desperate to have a sort of a function. And sometimes, you know, that manifests in like what they do for work, you know, or whatever, like it, you know, but sometimes it doesn't, people just don't know what they want to do. Yeah. And so they just kind of, you know, find it in other things or a hobby or something like that. But I was lucky to be like, oh, I was 16. The thing that I thought was cool was the thing that I did. And then that just kind of like led into a point where I was like, holy shit, like I do this. Like, yeah, this is who I am. And like, this is my talent, like actually manifesting into like my life.
When did you realize that? When did you realize this is what I'm doing?
Probably in my 30s.
In your 30s.
Yeah.
Because up until then, were you like, I don't know, maybe I'm going to go to law school or do whatever?
Yeah. I mean, it just didn't ever seem like, well, I'm going to make it in show business. Like, I just never had that that audacity or just kind of, you know, it wasn't like that for me. I definitely had goals, you know, that I would go for, but it was more like, I want this to exist. I want this to happen. I want to like go there or do that. So, you know, that was happening through music. But I mean, to say like, shit, I'm a professional musician or, you know, I'm an artist, really.
Yeah.
And like really understanding that, I'm not a musician. No one's hiring me for my music ability. I'm an artist. I'm creating things.
Yeah.
And that was something that I didn't really see until my 30s when I said, well, I guess that's really what I'm doing. So it doesn't, I might as well acknowledge it.
Like what's next?
I don't know. I'm really, it's been nice, I think, with the lockdown to just slow down quite a bit and not to have to go to the airport or really concern myself with that too much.
Yeah.
But we got this album in the can and I'm really happy with how it came out. So I've been kind of content focusing in on Quicksand right now and just letting that be my thing. And, you know, stuff opens up. I'm always like in a creative mode, but I'm not like, I'm also just kind of appreciating the moment.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.